Stephen Godfrey, welcome back to Phantom Island, presented by Homefield. You have today's question, but I'm gonna leapfrog you a little bit.
Okay.
Is it good to be a college football coach who gets mentioned in Golf Digest?
Ooh, I like this. What a paradox.
You can give the lawyer answer. It depends.
I know. Right? I think they all would, at first blush, be like, "Oh, yeah, absolutely,
yeah,"
because they all are weirdly into golf, and like I say, not weirdly into golf, like it's weird to be into golf. I'm saying they're weird about how competitive they are with their golf games.
Sure,
like it is that whole like, oh, compete in everything you do in life mantra trope that you hear college football coaches. They really take that to the links. Yeah.
The reason, so let's, before we get to your question,
okay,
can I lay out a little background for our audience here?
What we got? Yeah, go for it.
The reason I asked about Golf Digest is that recently Hugh Freeze was mentioned in that publication. Why, you might be wondering. Well, it's not for great reasons, although from a golf perspective, I guess it's pretty respectable. On June 24th of this year, Matt Stahl at AL.com wrote a story about Hugh Freeze and his enthusiastic golf habits. This was based on Auburn message boards having a bad time with their coach.
Auburn message board? Histrionic?
Who's to say? Their complaint was twofold. Number one, Auburn had been doing particularly poorly on the recruiting trail around that time. This is right around like 4th of July that this really sort of like started to pick up. They had lost 4 commits in their class. 3 of them had flipped to Kentucky, Georgia, and Florida State. And as we record this today, on July 17th, according to the 247 team rankings, Auburn has the 78th class for the signing class of 2026.
That's good, right?
No, it's not particularly good. You can name a number of SEC teams that are in the top 10, and I believe that they are below every other team in the SEC.
Let's quickly acknowledge we are recording this in mid-July. We are talking about a signing class that ends in February of 2026.
And even though a lot of them will sign in December,
Hang on. Yeah. I was only going to be logical for a second. It's still totally suitable in the SEC to like beat your chest and wail at any, like we have learned this over the years that at any point in time, regardless of if you have 6 months or 6 days to correct this problem, it is suitable in the SEC to complain about your head coach's recruiting if you are not number one all the time every day.
Yes, and to be fair, in the classes of 2025 and 2024, Auburn finished with top 10 classes. So maybe part of why the panic has set in is that there is some demonstrated ability of like, wait, you have recruited at this level with us.
Yes.
What's happening right now?
Mr. Hugh Freeze, a man I'm slightly familiar with, since he has arrived as head coach at Auburn, his shtick, a man with many shticks, some of those shticks got him in trouble, was that he was going to be an excellent high school football recruiter. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I throw high school in there as the sort of modifier is that in the year of our Lord, 2025, there are now two, some might argue equal or close to, methods in which you can acquire football playing personnel.
Yes.
And that's high school recruiting in the portal. Auburn has done well recruiting high school up until this point under Hugh Freeze and has sort of been invisible or non-active, or chose to be non-active, whatever quote you want to believe from Hugh Freeze, up until this point.
Yes, Jackson Arnold is an exception to that, but based on previous years, I'm laying
all this out to say that like the high school recruiting part of this was the one area where Hugh Freeze, 2 years into a completely unremarkable tenure at Auburn, has at least been able to...
Do you know what his record is after 2 years?
Is it 500?
No, that would be an improvement. Yeah, he's 11-14.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, of course he's not 500.
5-11 in conference play.
I'm trying to figure out if I could name the five SEC teams he's beat. I don't know how much we want to digress on this. I know there was a game he absolutely should have lost to Missouri in Auburn, so I know that's one of them.
Okay. I don't want to play this game, actually.
Georgia and Alabama are on there.
And I don't think Auburn fans want us to play this game either. Okay, so that's the background for why people are upset with Hugh Freeze as a recruiter. Pair that with the uninspiring record over the first two seasons.
Okay.
But the golf thing is what people have latched onto. Like I said, Matt Stahl wrote about this at AL.com, and he did a very fun thing.
Okay.
In golf, in the world of golf, you don't have to record your scores in this public database called the GHIN.
Do you know what that, I don't, is it Golf Handicap Index?
Keep going.
National?
I believe.
Number?
I believe.
Number?
It's network.
Network.
And it's
gotten there.
The Golf Handicap Information Network. So pretty good. You got pretty close there.
That sounds like, so you have like the Golf Network TV network. That sounds like the OAN of Golf Network.
Yes,
okay, sorry.
Yes. Okay. So this is where regular folks and college football coaches can put in their scores. And you do this so that you can sort of get an official handicap, which reflects how good you are at golf and how you're supposed to adjust. And
can I ask you something that we did not discuss before the show?
Yeah.
Do I have to have one of these if I golf?
No.
If you and I go golf at some like toity place.
Yeah.
Again, I should remind the listener, I have never swung a golf club in my life and don't plan on it.
And yet here we are talking about golf again. I don't plan on it. Yeah.
But if you and I were like to go to like the Forest Pine Hill Center fuckface, do I have to like, am I allowed on a course if my number's not high enough or low enough? Or this is just totally arbitrary?
What you're asking is a somewhat layered question. The general answer is no. You don't need a GHIN registration and handicap to just go play golf. There are certain events where you would want that. You would want that so that you can kind of like your score can be adjusted to reflect like how good you are and how bad you are compared to your competition. It's a way to sort of like level things out. It's also a way to just sort of like brag and sort of track yourself. It's a way to sort of say like, well, my handicap this time a year ago was 11, but now it's down to 7. And that means I've improved or something like that. But it's not mandatory in any way.
Okay.
There's no easy pass like scanning you to sort of be like, oh, you played without registering.
But it's almost a means of like the same way we've kind of gamified our entire lives in social media. It's a way for like two douchebags to talk to each other and be like, I'm an 11.5 or something.
Yes, it is. It is a shorthand way of telling people how good or bad you are at golf.
And I did ask you before we turned the mics on, what does a scratch golfer mean?
A scratch golfer is somebody who has basically a handicap of 0, which means they can play a course and they're expected to play it at par.
Okay. I know
at
that.
What the course I know that. Is okay. supposed to score at.
Okay. I would like to just throw this out there on tape that I did spend about $2,000 into a Golden Tee machine the years 2001 to 2003. So I know golf. Okay. I know golf.
All right. So Matt went through the database and at the time he published this article on June 24th, he noted that Hugh Freeze had already logged 10 rounds in GHIN for the month of June.
Oh.
He had to update the article that day and actually he went out and recorded, he reported another one today, so it was 11 for the month of June.
I didn't know that. I thought for sure you were about to tell me. He had to edit for clarity because Auburn jumped on his ass and said it wasn't that much. Nope. And he was like, as I was writing this.
He was out golfing.
This motherfucker's out there swinging right now.
Right. Okay.
Oh, I love this. Keep going.
So then Matt went through the SEC and sort of said like, okay, where does number
context.
Two on this list.
Any good journalist. Context. Sure. I'm not. Sorry. I know it sounds like tongue is firmly planted in cheek. It's not. This is good context.
Okay. Number two on the
list. Just take me to Kirby.
Shane Beamer. I'm only going to tell you who's number two on the list.
Shane Beamer. Okay.
Who at that point had played 3 rounds of golf.
In the month of June,
had played 3.
So, context again, June is arguably, well, at least it used to be before the concept of amateur athletics was sort of rendered a mess. June was like the slowest college football month for a head coach.
Yes.
Like spring ball's over. There's strength and conditioning you can't be a part of. I'm trying to lay. I'm giving my personal friend Hugh.
Yeah.
a little bit of benefit of doubt grace. Here.
Yes.
Is that you are maybe running some high school camps.
Yeah.
There are things afoot, but it is probably the one time of year in which you're going to take a break. You usually book in like last week of June into July 4th is like the standard national window of college football head coaches and assistant coaches going on vacation. Four seems normal. Well, you said three for Shane.
Three.
10 is a lot.
10 later 11 turned into 11 is a lot and was a lot by comparison and was bad. Like at the very least was bad timing to be having this much publicly recorded golf while your recruiting class was falling apart. And again, it's a long season. Maybe, you know, who knows what will happen.
This is the only comp I have for this is that recently my 10-year-old asked me about a video game on PS5, mm-hmm. and I casually mentioned, like a dumbass, in front of my wife, that I had 100%ed this game a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Not recently. Yeah. I said a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So it should have been out of the jurisdiction of marital strife.
Mm-hmm. It never is. There's no statute of limitations.
I said it was like, it took me about 75 hours to finish said game.
Yeah.
And in which my spouse, who I thought was not listening at the time, turned around and said, "Fuck, what?" She didn't get the full expletive out. It was just, "What?
You spent how much?" Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
But so my dogs spent 75 hours golfing in, how long does it take to play like a?
Conservatively. Yeah. Let's just say it's a 4-hour experience. Let's just say.
Okay. So he spent 40 hours ish.
Yeah.
And then the 11th.
Yeah.
40 hours golfing in June. That's a work week.
Sure.
Okay.
We're almost to the question, I promise. I know we don't usually backload the question this much because it's your question and it's a good one.
Well, we usually do it when I'm running the show because I have ADHD, but maybe I've infected you. Go.
The reason I bring up Golf Digest at the start of this is that this has become like a persistent thing. So much so that
Watergate.
At SEC Media Days, which are happening while we are recording this, Auburn's already had their day.
We elected not to go to SEC Media Days.
Very brave.
Because we have functional frontal lobes. Continue.
Hugh got asked about this and had, this is his quote that he said from the podium. "It's something I enjoy doing, but I assure you it does not take away from my time working to take Auburn back to the top of the college football world." Mm. And Hugh has explained in other contexts that basically, like, he hasn't missed any camp, he hasn't missed any recruit, you know, any, like, visits or whatever, and this is something he and his wife enjoy doing, and he sort of, like,
it's an activity with his wife.
That is part of this.
That's a new one. Activity with his wife is a new one.
And if they have like a half day of camp or something, he'll say like, "Great, we'll go golf in the afternoon" or something like that. All right.
Okay. And just to be clear.
Yeah.
And we don't have to get into like the beat by beat of this.
Yeah.
In this lax casual summer hours office vibe on the plains in Auburn, they're also losing high school recruits as the links be a swinging.
Yes.
That's not a golf term.
No, it's fine. Yes. This is lining up in time with when their recruiting class is losing.
Sure, that fan base is not going to draw that correlation at all.
Well, this and so that's sort of where we are today. All right. So that's all the setup that I think you and the listener needs to understand why Hugh Freeze is getting asked about his golf game. Also, like, Lane Kiffin is trolling him about it on Twitter. And, you know, this is persisting in ways that I'm sure Auburn would prefer that it didn't. So, now, what's the question you want to bring to this episode of Phantom Island?
This is a weird setup. When you brought this to me, we talked about the golf side of this.
Mm-hmm.
I've referenced our off-mic conversation to the point where I guess I'm going to start recording them, but I don't think this is a conversation about my head coach sucks because he's playing golf.
Okay.
Because I'm going to introduce another individual here, same concept, completely different reception, in just a second. I think the question today is, can we tolerate or can we accept the idea of a head coach who's not the workaholic?
Mm.
And
the anti-Gruden.
Yes. And if for some reason you don't follow professional or college football, or you're just unfamiliar with this, I would say for the better part of 30 years, the national and local media surrounding major, all everything to do with the NFL, but then I would say most major college football programs has participated in building this kind of burnishing a myth that coaches want you to believe. For years, coaches wanted you to believe that they were grinding, that they were working every hour and every second of every
day. And so were their staffs.
Of course.
Yes.
We're not out of here till 2 a.m. and we'll be back at 5.
Yep.
Okay? And the reason that it was so important to communicate that was to either justify the money they were making, justify the things they were asking for, justifying the behaviors or actions they took, or to show that they were working really hard to overcome a bad record, a bad season, a miss in recruiting, whatever. So the idea was no one's going to outwork us. That, that God knows that may be a top five trope. If I used one of these AI large language models for good and I fed every introductory press conference of a college football head coach the last 20 years, and I asked the large language model to like spit that back out.
Yeah.
I think a top five most common trope would be no one's going to outwork us.
Yeah, sure.
Now there have been...
Which becomes statistically impossible.
Correct.
Like everybody can't be in this category,
We're all grinding. We're all grinding. And there have been dissenting voices over history. One of the sort of characters that emerged in Who Killed College Football, or miniseries that you can go listen to right now, as early as the late 80s? Really more in the mid-90s when he became successful, was Steve Spurrier, the famous Florida head coach who was a national champion. And by the way, avid golfer. Loves golf.
Yeah.
And would routinely make fun of this, what we call now in our modern age, the grind bro mentality of rise and grind, got to show it. I'm up at 4 a.m., 100 push-ups in the dark, and I sleep in two-hour
in
increments.
Right.
Spurrier correctly pointed out that Florida would routinely whip these programs headed by coaches who believed in this nonsense, or at least espoused it. Whether they were doing it or not, who knows? Because I've been embedded with
not a lot of time card work goes into this.
Look, man, I've had access to major college football programs in the way that only a handful of people on earth have, and without really like throwing stones, there's some wiggle room in we're grinding all the time.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I have to be in this room in this building all the time, but like I do have a computer and a cell phone, so like there's still what I'd like to tell you right now is that even at the highest and most difficult program there is to win at, there's still a lot of internet fucking off. Like people are still online being like, oh, did you see that one YouTube clip? Like, let me send it to you. That still happens.
Assistant coaches listen to podcasts.
Yes. they do actually. Shout out to several of them listening right now. Y'all know who you are. I'll see you on Signal. I don't know if there is a change occurring. I don't know if there is a change occurring.
Well,
but
can we add one more wrinkle to this?
Yeah.
That mentality that you have described, coaches themselves have started to push back against.
A little bit. But this is where I was headed. Yeah.
In the last like 3 or 4 years. Go ahead.
Yeah. And some of it might be a sort of forced increased awareness of mental health across the board. I think some of it comes from the toxicity of that mentality going into the coach player dynamic and the player culture. And now that college athletes have more agency and a stronger voice because of it, then maybe you're seeing a feedback in the other direction saying like, no, this isn't going to be about grinding us into pulp. And, you know, it's not going to be about sort of the heights of the Saban era. The Nick Saban era was all about, we're going to absolutely ruthlessly work ourselves robotically into, a personality free mush.
Yeah.
I don't know if things are actually changing. I do know that, like you said, there is a little bit of a shift towards maybe not highlighting the grind bro bullshit quite as much. But I want to talk to you about another head coach named Trey Lamb. Trey Lamb is probably not someone that you probably don't know that name unless you are a college football sicko, which some of our audience is.
Yeah.
Some of our audience will look, some of our audience pays us legitimate American currency for me to talk about like the 6 worst teams in the Sun Belt. And I love it because I am also that kind of depraved human being. But If you're on the casual side, you know, the top 20 in college football, Trey Lamb is now the head coach at Tulsa. Previously, last season, he was the head coach at FCS program, East Tennessee State.
His only year there.
Yes, ETSU, as it's commonly known around these parts. By the way, we're recording this in Nashville. ETSU is far away from us. It's like it's a drive. Johnson City, shout out. Trey Lamb is, this is why I asked you what scratch golfer meant. He's a scratch golfer. He's like really good, apparently. I have sources in Oklahoma. I got sources everywhere. Don't forget it. Who have told me that, like, in addition to being a well-rounded, completely normal human being, he's a rising star in coaching. He's obviously made the jump from FCS to FBS. Tulsa's in the American Athletic Conference. And he's, like, really good. I keep saying this because I didn't understand the context of being that good at golf. So he has qualified for some sort of invitational. Is this Ryan? I sent you the story. I didn't understand it, but
he has qualified. I think it was earlier this month. Yes, for the Oklahoma Golf Association State Amateur Championship. He shot a 3 over 75 in his qualifying round, which was right on the cut line to claim one of the last spots. And he will play in the State Amateur Championship. It'll be actually right around the time this comes out, so we'll see how he does.
So if you go to like the Trey Lamb official page on Twitter, like his profile on Twitter is at Coach Trey T-R-E Lamb, like the animal, number 9. There's all of the things that you would expect to see a Twitter feed sort of marketing a culture, especially, by the way, this guy's in year one, so it's all about, we're changing this, we're going to be this, we're going to come up with new hype, new hashtag hype words and all, like all the tropes and all the nonsense that you associate with college football. That's all there. Retweeting player commits. Here's some, I'm looking at them. We got some offseason workouts. We got some advanced analytics, like all kinds of stuff. Here's a mention about Tulsa being in the new video game. All makes sense.
Yeah.
There's also a healthy amount of retweeting from Lamb himself or whoever runs his Twitter account.
Yeah.
Stories about how good a golfer he is.
Yeah.
And about how he enjoys it.
After he qualified for this tournament, Tulsa's official account, Tulsa football's account, like put a picture of him up swinging a golf club and was like, hey, look at our awesome coach who's so good at golf.
There's a quote in there somewhere, and I think it came from, I think I'm looking at the wrong story. It's not in here, but it's in some story that ran when he was at ETSU, and he was doing media, and he just basically said, hey, like, one thing you wouldn't know about me is that, like, I'm a scratch golfer.
Yeah.
I hit the links pretty well. I think he has 2 kids, and he's like, hey, my wife and kids understand that this is, like, what I do to, like...
This is my me time.
He said something to the effect of, I don't have the quote in front of me, but it's like, I don't hunt, I don't fish, I don't really do anything. This is the one thing that I do outside of work. And this is the thing that kind of like evens me out or whatever.
Right.
Which, by the way, like I don't have that in my life. So maybe me making fun of golf for the last 20 years is actually
coming
to my expense.
You put 75 hours into a video game. So I don't know if that's true.
Over a long period of time. You sound exactly like her. I don't need this here. It was like over the course of 2 years.
God. Sorry. Go ahead.
Fuck, I'm going to start playing Golden Tee again. So, no one cares. Now, the first response.
Sure.
No one cares so far.
Yeah.
There has not been any outrage. And in fact, it's been the opposite. The media coverage around Hugh Freeze. Now, AL didn't come out exact. AL.com did not come out and sort of
pillory.
Speak this.
Yeah.
But they all but in tone, this guy's golfing a lot, right?
Yeah.
Whereas, like, there was this CBS Sports, a couple other national outlets have been like, hey, Tulsa's head coach is a really good golfer.
Yeah.
And he put it on Front Street with a quote to the press about, like, this is what I do. This is how
is
I balance myself.
To me. Yeah.
It's very interesting to me. Now, the first response, I think, from any, like, college football diehard is going to be like, well, he's the head coach at Tulsa. This is the SEC we're talking about. This job at Auburn is just arguably more important. I think some of it has to do with age. And
yeah.
I think some of it has to do with the individuals that we're talking about here for context. So Trey Lamb's 35 years old. I believe Hugh Freeze is in his, let's find out real fast. I believe he's in his 50s. I believe there's like a 20-year gap. He's 55.
Okay.
I nailed it. Okay.
Great.
Born in 69. So part of it is generational, I believe.
Yeah.
And I do think that we are seeing, in addition to all the other changes in college football, an acceptance and understanding of our future college football head coaches that my personality profile in public is going to be different. that it's not going to be this sort of like gritty modernized version of the Bear Bryant, which is kind of what Nick Saban always presented himself as, mm-hmm. and Urban Meyer and all the rest.
Yeah.
Like, remember the ridiculously overwrought Urban Meyer press tour of like, I signed the contract in ink with my daughter because I was working too much. Like, it was always the, all of the, again, the burnishing of the myth of Urban Meyer was he worked so hard, he put himself in the hospital basically. Right.
Yeah.
I don't see modern coaches taking that route in developing their public personas. So I think that's a big part of it. Yes. Are there expectations around Tulsa that are in any way equal to Auburn this season or next? No, of course not.
Do you know where Tulsa... So I said Auburn 78th in the recruiting rankings. Do you know where Tulsa is?
If you're going to tell me it's nearby, this is where this story starts to get interesting.
88th. That far away.
Oh, my. Okay, let's shift for a second and maybe pose this.
Okay.
If my question might be headed towards... true, mm-hmm. meaning like if we are moving away from the workaholic character as head coach, like we can tolerate something other than that.
Yeah.
It still holds that if you're doing your job poorly, you probably shouldn't be publicly recording all of your golf scores while you're doing that.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Because Steve Spurrier is able to hit the links, talk shit, can't spell citrus without UT, go Vols. Right. And he's competing for and winning national titles.
Yes, he's winning 10 games a year. He's playing in the he's winning the SEC East all the time. Yeah, 100%. Has a Heisman winner, won the Heisman himself. Yeah, right.
But I also wonder at the same time, and this is where I'm sort of in conflict with myself, is someone going to get mad if... So Tulsa's been bad for a minute. You know, probably the most solid identity they've had in the last 20 years was under Philip Montgomery. They had him there for a long time. Like, I won't get too in the weeds with, like, Tulsa football. I could.
Yeah.
But they're also coming off of, like, a really bad sort of, like, you talk about internal character. Like, I would say, like, Bobby Petrino level toxic in Kevin Wilson. Mm-hmm. So it helps that Lamb is, like, presents himself young, as a balanced human being.
Young, kind of a blank slate as well. Like, that's part of this, too, is, like, Trey Lamb does not, at this point in time, trigger anything for a national audience in terms of, like, I think of him in this way.
Sure.
So you kind of have the advantage of, oh, okay, you're this up-and-coming guy, and you are great at golf. And I have no other, like, things to add to that. But with Hugh Freeze, given all of the baggage that he brings to it...
What are you talking about?
We don't even have time to possibly do that on this episode.
I've only built 5 years of a career off of it.
Yeah.
But go off.
But I think there is a... Let's put it this way. With Hugh, there are two things working against him. Number one, how to put this as delicately as possible.
Uh-huh.
Hugh Freeze has shown or seems to have shown that he has a problem getting distracted.
Wow. Well done. That was the lightest touch possible.
That has manifested in different forms. Mm. Sometimes he's distracted online. Sometimes he's distracted in Tampa, Florida.
I know a lot of contractors, and I'm just going to go ahead and tell you that right now the word distraction is not a load-bearing word.
So that's number one.
We're at risk of a cave-in with your sentence.
So that's number one. When you see Hugh Freeze golfed 11 times in the month of June as his recruiting class was falling apart, I think some part of the brain goes to, uh-oh, this is Hugh getting distracted again. He's not keeping his eye on the ball.
Mm-hmm. I have something here that you don't know about.
Okay, great.
And it only belabors this sort of juxtaposition between Hugh Freeze is a bastard because he's playing golf. And, hey, look at Trey Lamb. He's good at golf and everyone's fine with that.
Yeah.
Our buddy Sources Brett McMurphy.
Yeah.
Or is it Brett Sources McMurphy?
Brett Sources McMurphy.
Brett Sources McMurphy. Sources McMurphy is what we called him for a long time. Now at On3. Just posted On3. On3 be making some graphic design. Okay? But this one, I gotta tip the hat. Okay? Since we started recording this, I told you that Trey Lamb, kind of putting it on Front Street, like, hey, this is the thing about my personality. I'm into golf, whatever. Right? Okay? On3 has the college football head coach USGA GHIN rankings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Trey Lamb is number one in the nation, according to the GHIN.
Yeah.
He has a plus 1.3 ranking.
Yeah, right. Every That's other his, number? His handicap is 1.3. Yes.
Okay, so, but every other number on here doesn't have a plus next to it, which I mean...
So he's that actually means he's yes, he's better than a... He's slightly better than the scratch golfer. Yes.
Okay.
Sorry,
okay.
I thought... I'm not looking at the graphic. Yes,
okay.
Right.
So if gotcha. We were to, in the old school, put on our old school sort of like a... 1970s newspaper writer, college yeah. football, we're showing fealty and idolatry towards these coaches. We're helping burnish that myth.
Mm-hmm.
We would say, if you're this good at golf, like, damn it, you're not working hard enough,
yes.
kind of thing.
Yep.
Or I've been golfing with you and I won't tell the public.
Right.
It's sort of, it's an interesting list. I'm going to run it down.
Okay.
Number two is Trent Dilfer.
We're, yeah.
At the University of Alabama, yes. Birmingham.
Yes.
He is 0.7. But Rhett Lashley is number three, with a 4.4.
Okay.
I don't know what, so we jump in number and ranking, and this is where it starts. Everyone gets kind of crowded. So Rhett Lashley is 4.4, and then I'll just go ahead and jump to number 20 is Joey McGuire at Texas Tech at 16.
Okay.
So again, because I don't understand golf,
yeah,
like,
sure.
they're all kind of mushed together.
Yeah, right.
But it looks like Trent Dilfer is as good at golf as Trey Lamb.
Yeah.
I find this funny because Trent Dilfer, again, to go back to the state of Alabama, and I don't necessarily, I'm trying to paint this as a regional thing, Trent Dilfer under fire, tremendously hot seat coach. UAB is kind of a flaming, you know, garbage can mm-hmm. right now. I think if I was the old school sports writer, I could maybe draw up a crappy my column here and say, like, if you're this good at golf, you should probably be better at coaching, because you're talking about, like, there are some exceptions on here, like Rhett Lashley, Lincoln Riley, take it or leave it. I mean, he's had some success. He's a 9.1 on here. He's behind Hugh Freeze.
Yeah.
Hugh Freeze is number 7 on this.
Okay.
He is behind Jason Candle, Scott Abel, the new head coach at Rice, Joe Harizmiak, who's the new head coach at UMass, Rhett Lashley, Trent Dilfer, Trey Lamb. So that's like a mix of programs and names there. I don't know what inference you could draw. I would like to point out two national champions. Ryan Day, a 12.3. He's on this list. He's in the teens. Behind him is Kirby at 12.6, Kirby Smart.
Yep.
Bill Belichick, of some success in the world of football, 12.5.
Okay.
So, I care if I'm a fan that Kirby Smart has a 12.6 and Hugh Freeze has a 7.6? No, I just care that Kirby won me a title, right?
Here's the thing. To circle us back to your core question of work-life balance.
Uh-huh.
Trey Lamb, it's fine that Trey Lamb is doing this. It's fine that Trey Lamb is qualified for the state amateur championship because it's year one. There is no track record to look at. Both okay. Trent Dilfer and Hugh Freeze
are
entering year three, and years one and two haven't not gone well.
Not gone great, Bob.
And that's, I think, a big part of it is that you can get a... How much you're allowed to get away with, I think, depends on, like, both where are you in the process and what have you done for me lately? And the answer for both Trent Dilfer and Hugh Freeze is not very much in the second category. Whereas Trey Lamb, like, there's nothing he has screwed up yet. I think if Trey Lamb churns out 2-3-win seasons
mm-hmm.
and is still playing golf this publicly and this celebratedly,
yeah, people will
will feel different. But I think there's the interesting thing that is sort of that maybe Hugh Freeze is going to force us to reckon with here, you tell me, is the sport changing itself in such a way that this is actually what we should want? Like, part of what's different about this than Steve Spurrier, for example, is that what a college football and what an athletic department looks like is very different.
Yeah.
Before we dive into that, we're going to stop very briefly to thank our sponsor, Homefield. This episode and all the others of Phantom Island are brought to you by our friends at Homefield, offerers of the most comfortable, stylish, and distinctive collegiate apparel on the planet, and probably on several other planets as well, if you're willing to be patient with shipping times. This is your early heads up to pay attention to Homefield's many social accounts, because they, and we here at Phantom Island, will be giving you your first peek at what Homefield has in store for football season and the 2025 Can't Miss Kickoff apparel drops next week. So no, this is not that peek, this is the pre-peek, the peek before the peek, like when you get caught trying to cheat at Marco Polo or hide and go seek, but before you actually gain any information on where anyone is. You're not in trouble. Okay, back to the episode. So to get back into the thing that has changed, we're not going to do it on this episode, but the roles of college coaches in roster acquisition, relationships, and maintenance are changing a lot as schools start to get GMs and schools start to sort of like figure out how this all will work with the house settlement, with NIL changing significantly. And so I kind of wonder, like, is there room for maybe not to the level Hugh Freeze is golfing, but is there room for a greater sense of like, yeah, the coach has this kind of role and doesn't need to live in the world of like, of the grinder of like, I put in 70 hours every week, no matter what, because it doesn't make sense when the competitive landscape is like, well, no, we don't need to ask that of the head coach anymore. We have a whole department that's supposed to do that for you.
It's very possible, but it's going to be less about what you can show or tell and more about what the rank and file fan accepts.
Sure.
And it's going to take
the Auburn message boards are not feeling very positive about
also
it, for
probably
sure.
Not an, like, I don't know, I took a couple statistics class in college, biased sample.
Sure.
Corrupted sample, I think, is what you're supposed to say. Corrupted sample, good description of any Auburn message board. But to not joke for a second, it will take longer than the actual reality for the perception to catch up because you have generations of college football fans who do expect, again, this sort of emperor god of a head coach. Mm-hmm. And we are moving fast towards the dynamic of, we might have a GM of equal importance one day at a program that is winning national titles.
Maybe greater importance. That's depending sort of on like, some, who knows how this will work.
That is tricky only in the fact that I think that, and I can only use the NFL as a comp.
Yeah.
I know you and I could sit here and probably come up with a decent list of GMs that are more responsible for Super Bowl victories than head coaches.
Go Birds.
I don't make fun of Nick Sirianni. I'm indifferent to the Nick Sirianni experience, but I know you guys are always like, you know.
We'll fire him week four this year. Doesn't matter.
There's a lot of dudes who would tongue kiss Howie Roseman and learn a lot about themselves sexually. Whereas they're like, fuck Sirianni. There's probably five or six of those pull from the last 15 years.
Yeah.
I don't know, though, if it is, I don't know if rank and file sports fans are ever going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
At least not a lot.
So here's...
The head coach is always going to sort of be the superhero role to the average fan.
So here's the tricky hypothetical.
All right.
Let's say Hugh Freeze plays 11 rounds of golf this June. Mm-hmm. And let's say his record is what it is after the first 2 years. We're not changing that.
No.
But let's say the recruiting class doesn't fall apart quite the way it did. Let's say it's 2 decommits instead of 4. Is it still a problem perception-wise? Is it still like, boy, this is just too much golf to be playing?
It's
when
Auburn,
when you haven't taken us to a bowl game.
There's another name on here, and that's Brian Kelly, and he's at 17.
Okay.
Right below Sonny Dykes and Kirby Smart. Right above Kyle Whittingham and Thomas Hammock. I don't know what you can draw from that, if anything. So he is, this isn't strokes, this is like whatever the rating is. He's very, very close to, in terms of his quality of golf, he is a point and a half off of Kirby Smart and Ryan Day, basically.
Sure.
Two national title winners. Yeah. And Belichick's right in there, too.
Yeah.
I don't know what, if anything, you could draw from that, but Brian Kelly...
I think we're learning there is no correlation between your golf handicap and your college football success.
Well, but here's what I'm getting at is like, if Brian Kelly has won one or two more games or LSU has a playoff berth or what have you, I don't think fans care at all. But there's a quieter version of the dissatisfaction at Auburn with Hugh Freeze that's building in Baton Rouge with Brian Kelly. Maybe we'll hear about his golf game soon. I think all politics are local, and in Baton Rouge, they just wish Brian Kelly was actually in Baton Rouge maybe, you know, a few months a year outside of football season. I don't know if we can answer today's question, but I do think it is worth asking because we are shifting our perception of what is important to have from our college football head coaches, what traits are important.
Yeah.
I do think this sort of, again, whatever you want to call it, emperor, warrior, god, he works 90 hours a day. I think that mentality, if it's not dying, then it is shifting. An interesting point that came up when I was recording the latest Numbers and Words episodes with Bill Connolly, which should be in your feed close to when
in
you
a couple
hear
days.
This.
Yeah.
We were talking about just anecdotally the effect of the return of EA college football. And I honestly can't remember because it's been a minute since we recorded this episode, but Bill was referencing like, oh, well, if a coach is of a certain age, he almost certainly was like, he came up playing that game and understands sure. the importance in a different way. And it kind of speaks to this as well, is like, if you were a 35-year-old head coach right now, your behavioral pattern is going to be different. And then maybe, like, I'm just going to take this a step further. Recruiting is still recruiting in a lot of ways. And I'm not joking. It's going to sound like a joke what I'm about to say. But if I had a young head coach who was winning some games on the field, and I'm at sort of like a mid-major like Tulsa,
yeah,
and he was really good at Call of Duty, I swear to God that would come in handy in recruiting.
Well, that's to go all the way back. I think the answer to the question, is it good for your coach to be in Golf Digest, is very different if you are Tulsa football than if you're Auburn football. Like,
yeah,
all press is good press for but Tulsa football to some extent
now. What if some 33-year-old savant coach is also like got a Twitch? He I'll Twitch.
Yeah,
I'll stream on Twitch.
Right.
I'm good enough at COD to get in there and do PvP and stuff.
Yeah.
Like where are we dropping in Fortnite, boys? Is that...
Now I'm thinking of Brian Kelly trying to do this, and it's very funny to me for reasons that I think are obvious.
Only if he's Twitch streaming with the fake Foghorn Leghorn.
Yeah, that would be pretty satisfying. Okay, can I ask you one more question?
Yeah.
That's a little bit... I'm going to ask you to prognosticate a little bit, but I don't know. I think nobody listening to this will be surprised by this. You talk to coaches. I don't. So you, I think, have a better sense of like where they're at. This is a two-parter. Number one, do you think there is like real burnout amongst the coaching set? Not necessarily just head coaches, because a lot of like we've talked anecdotally about how like being the linebackers coach at some of these schools is really hard in the portal era because you don't have that like those dead periods in the same way that you used to. So do you think there is some sense of within the coaching community of like, oh, this isn't sustainable and this is not necessarily the life that I want? And like, listen, you don't have to believe it, but Jeff Hafley all but said that's why he left Boston College to go take a coordinator job with the Packers.
Yeah.
So that's number one. And number two, if that's true, do you think that starts to become a thing programs use to make their job better? Like instead of trying to seek out, okay, who's the next John Gruden who will spend 80 hours in the facility and will only see his family for two holidays a year? Do you think there will be some shift to say, wait a second, to get good coaches and assistants, what we need to say is like, hey, we're offering you a more manageable lifestyle because we have better support infrastructure that can lighten the load for you and allow you to excel at four tasks instead of having to grind at 10.
That is very NFL.
Yes.
So you're kind of trying to paint a picture of a world in which if you do see the kind of public chest beating of being the grind bro, it's a symptom of a negative culture.
It means you're...
Well, it's always been a symptom of a negative culture. Symptom of a losing, a bad program.
It's a market inefficiency to be exploited.
Yeah, it's very possible.
Yeah.
It's very possible. Okay, I'm going to leave this episode with a hypothetical for you.
Oh, good. Great.
So, much unlike some dumbass who said that he spent 70 hours on a video game within earshot of his wife, what if... These are just pedestrian numbers. And what if you have, hypothetically, a head coach who's out there golfing so much and is so passionate about golfing while he's the head coach of a football program that's expecting him to win that he is actually hiding how much he golfs?
Oh, yeah. I mean, so to go back to your question about do you have to report these numbers?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to sign up for a GHIN account at all.
Yeah.
And you don't have to put in every round that you play. It can be said.
It's possible.
With theoretical accuracy that Hugh Freeze played at least 11 rounds of golf in the month of June.
So what you're telling me is that a man whose entire career was marked by the fact he didn't use a burner finally figured out how to do that. Hypothetically.
To do a little cleanup at the end here, as of Monday, July 21st, Auburn has jumped up to 75th in the 247 composite ranking for the 2026 recruiting class, no longer last in the SEC because they are ahead of Mizzou by one spot. And during an appearance on the Opening Kickoff podcast, SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey came to Hugh Freeze's defense, saying, quote, "Some of our coaches fish, some of them will go coach their kids' youth teams or travel around to watch a son or daughter play. I think every piece of that is about balance of life, and that makes you better at coaching. It doesn't diminish your coaching ability." So everything's fine, and there's no reason to worry. Thank you for listening to Phantom Island, presented by Homefield and produced by Michael Serber. We'll see you next time.